Let's get this party started.
Welcome to the I Squint Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the I Squint Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Lang. In this, the 14th episode of the I Squint Podcast, it's actually a three-part series having to deal with the Stage Lighting's Super Saturday that happened back on January 22nd. I have to give a huge thank you to Mr. Scott Parker and Mr. Sonny Sonnenfeld for allowing me to record this segment and providing it here on the I Squint Podcast. It's actually really special. It is Mr. Ken Billington, lighting designer, Broadway lighting designer, television, film. He's done a number of architectural lighting designs. You name it, Mr. Billington has done it. He actually gave the keynote speech at Saturday's Super Saturday. Mr. Billington talked a lot about how he got started in the industry, what excites him about lighting design, and just some hints, tips, tricks, you know, just a couple of mentions about how to be successful and exploring different avenues in lighting design, not just Broadway, off-Broadway, theatrical, but also concert, architectural. There's a number of different things, but I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to let Mr. Billington cover it. So here we go, Mr. Ken Billington from Stage Seminar Super Saturday, January 22nd, 2011.
Hey there, how is everyone? Is the echo good enough? Can you understand what we're saying? So here I am. You know, I'm a lighting designer. I live, you're all that way. The podium's that way. Let me do this. Good. Sorry. So I don't have any slides, so we're going to close that. I'm a lighting designer. I live in New York. This is what I do. I design lights. So first thing I'm going to ask, how many people here are in high school? How many high school guys do we got? Ooh, good crowd. How many college guys? Good. How many teachers? Oh, good chunk there. Any electrician types? Oh, another chunk. Well, that's good. You know, I'm going to tell you, let's go back to the high school crowd. That was me. You know, I grew up just outside of New York in a town called Harrison, New York. And I went to Harrison High School. But in the fourth grade, I turned the lights on and off for the fourth grade play. I was an actor. I had misbehaved. I was thrown out of the show. So as my punishment, I got to work the lights. And I learned all the switches. This was, but the theater had a balcony and everything, but it had switches. And so the teacher said to me, my punishment was over after a day or something, but I learned all the switches. So we came down to the auditorium and it was dark, and the teacher said, somebody go find the custodian to turn lights on. And I said, I can do that. And so I went and turned on all the lights, which was two circuits of footlights and two rows of R40s overhead. But it was on, it was bright. And she said, oh, you can run the lights. And I said, oh, cool, I'm going to run the lights. I don't think we said cool then. Anyway, so I got to run the lights. And there was a moment in this fourth grade play in front of the fourth grade students where we did a blackout. Now, this is radical in the fourth grade, doing a blackout, because you never know what's going to ensue. But so we did the blackout, and my friend Sherry Zimmerman had a pair of cymbals, which she did right in my ear as I pulled this huge knife switch. Well, it seemed huge to me at the time. And I pulled the knife switch. Everyone transformed on stage to something. And she slammed the cymbals. I pulled the knife switch while the knife switch was down. This is how smart he was in the fourth grade. I took all the other switches and pulled them out, threw the big one in, and then faded the lights up. And the rest of the grammar school audience started cheering. I still do it. So, you know, and that was the beginning, and I loved it. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought playing with lights was fun. My parents were always having heart attacks because they'd look in the backyard, and it was always like this 30-foot straight ladder going up, refocusing the floodlights up into the trees, not down where people were tripping, but the trees looked lovely. So I did that. And then I made it to junior high school, which was in the high school, and I joined the stage crew. And it was a big old manual console, and I ran that. And then I got with the community players, the Harrison players, and I started lighting their shows. And I was a pro by ninth grade now. And they gave me a lighting rental budget. And I went off to Altman and Yonkers, which was down the street, and as many lights as I could get into the station wagon, I rented. Thank you. And the first show was 10 Little Indians. And a fellow by the name of Gary Casarella had said, well, we should get this many Fresnels and this many Lecos. So I ordered that many Fresnels and that many Lecos. I hung them, circuited them, and used the Lecos as area lights and the Fresnel for a wash. He had, of course, thought you would use the Fresnels for, but so there I was in the ninth grade designing the way I was going to continue to design using Lecos for area lights. And did it through high school and decided, this is my career, I'm going on, I'm gonna do this, and nobody would take me into college. I couldn't get into school. SATs were not good enough. So, by the way, in 1965, there were only about four schools in the United States that offered a lighting course. Yale, Carnegie Tech, Carnegie Mellon now. So there were a few, Emerson, but there weren't very many. Anyway, I didn't get in. All right. So what am I going to do? So I found a lighting course in New York. I took a lighting course in New York. I started working off-Broadway. I would do load-ins. I would build scenery. I knew nothing about scenery. You know, here I am, 18, working off-Broadway, building scenery. And I was working on some show off-Broadway, and the set designer said, well, put the moldings on. You know, there was a crown molding around. And the set was built in perspective, and I had to do miter the corners in perspective. I don't even know how to do it today. I screwed it up so badly at one point I went in my car and bought more molding, which I paid for. But anyway, I did all that. Then I became an assistant to Theron Musser and started working on Broadway as an assistant. I did that for till the ripe old age of 23. I stopped assisting because I had probably assisted on about 20 some odd Broadway shows, and then said, I'm going to be a designer. And I sort of starred for a little while because everybody knew me as an assistant. Nobody knew me as a designer, even though I had done off Broadway and all that. And a show happened, and there was a repertory company in New York called The Phoenix, and they were doing a season. And Theron had lit the season before, and I had done some workshop stuff for them. So Theron said to them, well, hire Ken to do this season, because she couldn't. So she said, so they called me, and there I was, my first Broadway show at 25, directed by Harold Prince, the play The Visit. And I thought, wow, I made it. I'm a Broadway designer. But I didn't know any of these people. But I assisted everybody, so I knew my way around. So I remember going to Hal Prince. This is how naive I was. I go to a meeting at Hal Prince's house. And for those of you who don't know, Hal Prince directed things like Phantom of the Opera, Evita, produced Fiddler on the Roof, and Cabaret. You know, probably the foremost director of musicals of the last century. And so I go to his house, and there's a production meeting, and they talk about the scenery, they talk about the costumes, they talk about the sound, they talk about the schedule, they talk about the rehearsal schedule, and then Hal says, great, we'll see everybody in a month, or whatever it was. And I said, oh, maybe they don't know who I am. And so the meeting was breaking up, and I went up to Hal, and I said, Hal, and he said, yes, Ken. I said, well, he knows my name, we're on our way. And I said, we should talk about the lighting. And he got this look on his face and said, okay. And what do you want to talk about? I said, well, we should talk about what it's going to look like. He said, okay. And I said, you know, there's two ways of doing this show. One, we could do it with shafts. I love shafts. Do it with shafts of light. End of production meeting. And it was the beginning of my career with Hal. That's all he ever told me. I got a Tony nomination. I've never been out of work since. So I'm not big on this collaboration with the director because they don't usually ever say anything. Now, that's wrong. They do say a lot to you, but it isn't probably what you think it is. You know, when I have a collaboration with the director calls and says, hey, why don't we have a lunch? I say, great. So you go. This is probably with a new director that I haven't worked with. And you go and you have lunch and you sit down and you talk about what show they saw last week and what's happening with Spider-Man or whatever, you know, what's going on. And then you talk about what they did last summer and where they live and what their rent is and things like that. And then say, talk about the play for, 3 minutes. Hey, I like the play. Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be pretty good. I love what the set designers come up with. Yeah, it's very realistic. Good. Anyway, what are you going to have for lunch? That's usually the end of it. Did you get along? Did you have a good time? Are you somebody they're going to be able to work with? Yes. At this point in my life, they know I know how to light the stage and the actors are going to look good. But are they comfortable with you? Are you somebody they want to get so intimate with, sitting in the auditorium with you, standing over your shoulder saying, "Oh, what's wrong?" Because you become, at that point, more than the lighting designer, because you have the set designer, you have the costume designer, you have the producer, you have the director, the choreographer coming to you, mainly because you have a table. So they can put their stuff on your table. You have a bench behind your table, you know, we call them butt boards that go across the seats so you can see over everybody. So everyone has a tendency to congregate there. I also put a big candy bowl, because the candy bowl, they come over and they eat and don't ask questions. Get that sugar high going. So we do that, but you become more than that. You know, I've had many directors say, we've done a scene, and they'll say, why isn't that working? And then you become more than the lighting designer. You pull up your knowledge of the theater. Why didn't that work? Well, you know, is it too dark? Is it the costume the wrong color? You know, well, you know, maybe it's the way we're getting into it. Should we go into it slower and should not everybody come on? And go, well, that's a good idea. Maybe we try it. We do those things. That's part of what our job is. The reason I love working on Broadway, because we're usually creating new shows. And when you create a new show, you become a collaborator with everybody. You know, I tell the story, I did a musical, the original Sweeney Todd, a number of years ago. And we had a transition out of the opening out of the ballad of Sweeney Todd into the river going into the dock, No Place Like London. And the transition was a bit of a mess, and it didn't work. And I watched it one night, and I said, oh, this is what we need to do. So I went to Hal Prince, and I said, you know, this transition isn't working. And he said, oh, that's a good idea. Steve. And so Steve Sondheim comes over and says, Ken, tell Steve what you just told me. So I said, we should do this, this, and this. And Steve said, that's great. Let's do it. Paul. So he calls Paul Gemignani, the musical director, over and says, what do we got music-wise? Look, Ken, tell him what you want to do. This, 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 this. And Paul says, well, I can take the music from there, and we can put it there. And Hal said, let's do that. We'll put it in. So we went down, I went to the lighting table, everybody went and did their appropriate jobs, music did music, director did what they were supposed to, and we put it into the show. That transition in the version of Sweeney Todd you see and is published and everything is the one I came up with. My name isn't there, but that's what I do. That's the fun part. Yep, turning the lights on and off is cool and it's fun and I love it, but it's the collaboration with everybody else. So we're not one-man bands. We are in this together. You know, I always say the best review is no review. If you walk out of a show having said, this is fabulous, this is great, this is the best show I've ever seen, not coming out and saying, wow, the scenery, and the show is pretty good too. Or you can't come out whistling the lights. You're going to come out whistling the songs. So you really want to have it as a total theatrical experience. And doesn't happen often, by the way. It really doesn't. Chorus Line is a great example of where everything came together and you were awed by it. The set was some mirrors, a pari actoi with mirrors in black, and it was a void of with done with lighting, with no haze, no smoke. And you was just at the end of it went, wow, you know, is the score to Chorus Line the best score ever written for the musical theater? I don't know. I don't think so. There's a couple of hit songs. But you put the whole thing together and you come up with one of the greatest musicals ever done. So you never know what that collaboration is going to be. So anyway, I do lights. I love doing lights. I collaborate. I do them. I will do anything. You know, I've lit 93 Broadway shows. which is exhausting when I think about it, but I've also done as many off-Broadway shows, and then you start doing, and I said, well, you know, I can't limit myself to just doing theater. Theater's fun, but I didn't know, and one day I was lighting an opera for Hal Prince, and it's New York City Opera, and I was doing stuff, you know, I'm a good theater lighting designer, so I made good opera lighting designer, I guess. And I lit this opera, and in the middle, at intermission of the dress rehearsal, Liza Minnelli comes running down the aisle to the production table, and she said, this is the best lighting I've ever seen. And I said, well, thank you. And she said, you have to light my act. So I lit Liza Minnelli's nightclub act. I had never done a nightclub act. I had never done Liza Minnelli's nightclub act, but I started lighting nightclub acts. And all of a sudden, I got a very good reputation for making ladies look beautiful on stage. So I lit Liza Minnelli, Anne Margaret, Shirley MacLaine, Julia Prowse, the McGuire sisters. And then, of course, I was doing so much, Liberace, Siegfried and Roy. And I had this whole Vegas career. But I did it well because I knew how, I came from my theater background. I was going on doing that, and I was doing lots of opera because all of a sudden I was an opera lighting designer, and I was doing nightclub acts. And then somebody called and asked me to light a restaurant. And I said, oh, okay. I went and lit a restaurant. I never lit a restaurant before. Anyway, I had this great architectural career, which I do in spurts a bit, but, you know, Tavern on the Green was my, I did that. Not the lights and the trees, that was Bob Ware, but everything else was mine. Just did worked on the Belasco Theater renovation. So I got into architectural lighting. And then television. Somebody called and asked me to do a TV show. What did I know about television? I called my friends to do television, and they said, just look at the camera. If it looks good, you're fine. I said, okay. And I lit something and got an ACE award for my first television show, which is was the cable version of the Emmys. That doesn't exist anymore. And all of a sudden, I had this TV career. I never went into any of it scared. Yes, nervous, absolutely. Wanted to do, did my homework, did my research, did everything about it. And I worked as hard as I could for it. And, you know, and maybe I was shaking a little bit when I walked in for my first television show. But nobody knew that. And I looked at it and I said, wait a minute, what's the worst thing they can do to me? What's the worst thing they're going to do to me? Fire me. They're not going to take me out back and shoot me. So, you know, I thought, you know, if I really screw up terribly, they'll bring somebody else in and I won't do television anymore. Well, so with that attitude of, I can do this, and I did it. And I pick things I like to do. I love doing theater. So that's what I do. I think what I'm saying, there's lots of careers out there. You know, there's a Broadway, definitely, and that's fun. Honestly, there's probably 10 of us that light every Broadway show. It's a small field. It changes. There's Off-Broadway, which opens it up a little bit further. Then you get into regional theater, and you get into that world, which opens it up further. There's concert lighting. There's the world of rock and roll. And yes, there's big things like U2, but then there's stuff like the local band. They all need to be lit. There's architectural lighting. There's a lot of architectural lighting firms. There is television lighting for days. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on out there. It isn't all theater. It is all sorts of lighting, you know. And not everybody's going to become a lighting designer. You know, some of you here think lighting is good, and you want to do lighting, and you go on and you will study lighting. But what are the other careers that go with what we do here? One is, well, there's the lighting designer and all those other subcategories of lighting designer. And you don't have to specialize, but you can. I always thought everything I learned as a lighting designer about angle and color, how to work with people, how to collaborate, all those things stood me very well into going into other things. When you go into architectural lighting, it's the same as theatrical lighting, except you can't move the lights if you put them in the wrong place because they're in the ceiling. And you have to make the people look good. You know, there's nothing worse than sitting in a restaurant underneath a table and having downlight making you look like you should be in a horror film. Maybe people aren't going to eat dinner there because they don't want to look bad. So maybe downlights aren't the answer. Maybe bouncing light off the ceiling is a better answer. But it's about making people look good, making the food look good. You don't want to put green on the table because nobody would eat the food. Put a little pink on the table with white tablecloths and it bounce up, you know, make people look good. Or put white on the table and pink tablecloths. All of a sudden everyone has footlights. Footlights are good. So there's lots of things. Anyway, other professions that come right along with lighting. Let's talk about electricians. Now, an electrician, I am useless in my career without an electrician. I am not an electrician. I have hung a lot of lights in my early career. I know what it takes to hang a first electric. I know what it takes to focus it. I know what it takes when the guy is balancing on his toes and you have a fixture that doesn't work. And I have to be able to know to say, when I'm talking to a guy up there and I'm down here and the light isn't doing what I think it should do, or it's banging into something, or I can say, can we yoke it out a little bit and pull it back? And yeah, okay. Now, do you have the barrel all the way out? Yeah, and it's still not hanging. Push the barrel back in. Okay, the barrel's in. Okay, we'll put a piece of frost in. You have to know how this works. I did that. I don't do it every day. I don't hang lights. But I did. I understood that. Until you have done that, you don't know what you're asking a guy to do, you know, 35 feet in the air or further in some places, if you can't describe to them. I never say, when I do a LECO, bring in the top shutter is what I'll do, even though it's the bottom one on the fixture. I assume they will push some things and they'll figure out which one is up here when I'm doing that. Though I know it's the bottom one that's going to bring the top in. So I know about that. But an electrician is my partner. I give my light plot to an electrician on a Broadway show, and the electrician then takes it and he pulls. I tell the shop what I want in the big picture, equipment-wise. The electrician figures out what we need, so many twofers and so many 50-foot jumpers and all the other stuff to make it work, and that he'll need spare gel frames and elbow holders. That's the electrician's job, not my job. The electrician also supervises the hang of the show, puts together a crew to come in and hang the show. We'll say, well, we need 14 men to do this, or we need 6 men, or whatever. And is there, I come in while they're hanging it, and I'll look and say, something wrong with the box boom. And the electrician, I'll say, we should try this. He say, right, Ken, we got it. And he then knows what to do. He stays with the show. In these days, you have to know a lot about networking to make all the consoles work. They have to know about DMX, obviously. They have to know how to make the electronics work. And if it was only plugging the dimmers in, it'd be fine. But there's, as you will look at these tables today, there's a lot of stuff in there that it takes to make the lights come on and off in various different things. And then you start getting into moving lights. So electricians, really important. Most of the production, I know all the production electricians in New York have college education. So these are not guys who just decide to do this. Some are, but there's a whole world out there. And yet you're going to say, well, I'm not in the union. There's a whole world of non-union electricians off-Broadway. Out in the world, a lot of the non-equity touring companies have non-union electricians. There's a world out there, and it's a good way to learn and move your way up. The other thing is a programmer, you know, the guy who programs the moving lights. As a designer, I don't touch consoles. I know how to work them. I'd probably be pretty slow, but I can, when my operator doesn't know how to do it, which isn't often, but sometimes you say, no, put one at full time, 5, enter, and then he'll do it. You know, I can tell them all those things, but programming is a real profession. And now let's take programming and put it into a sub-series here. A programmer, I always say there's the master programmer, there's the programmer, and then there is the electrician. Now, the electrician knows how to turn the console on, can run the show, can check out the lights, could rehang a light and probably refocus it. But that's what the electrician can do. The next is you go to a programmer who then understands how all this works. Excuse me. And can program the lights, can run the lights, can probably fix the lights, is much more in tune with the design process. And then you go to a master programmer, and these are guys that have been programming for a long time. They're probably all lighting designers. They, almost all of them started in rock and roll, doing concert stuff. And what does that programmer do? Well, when I work with a programmer, and there's four or five that I work with all the time, a couple in particular, I'll turn to them and say, hey, on this transition, should we do a little wiggle back and forth with the color chase? And they'll go, okay. And then they'll say, hey, Ken, look at this. And you'll see a little thing like that. And I'll say, how about we do it with every other light? Oh, sure. I said, oh, split them so they're going back and forth. Oh, okay. And then they'll put in a color chase for me and say, no, it should be magenta yellow. Okay. But they become a design partner. They create things for me. I have had to sit there and say, put fixture one over here, put fixture two over there. Now, record that as preset one, then move them over here and put it two. Now we're going to make, that isn't what I need to do. I need to turn to the guy and say, give me something. With the good programmers, the second a set shows up on stage, they start focusing lights. They don't talk to you. Look, there's a drop on stage because they're trying to figure out why it won't go out. All of a sudden, I look up and they're putting lights on the drop and gobos on the drop and then they store it as drop. So when that drop shows up, they'll say, oh, hang on, we got this and we can light the drop. They're always a step ahead of me. But they're designers. They really are designers. By the way, they make good money. A good New York programmer makes between $600 and $800 a day. When you go to concert lighting and to television, they get more. In the industrial world, it's about $1,000 a day. So it's a real profession. I remember doing a musical where my programmer, a Broadway flop musical, a major flop musical, where my programmer made more money than I did. The show closed opening night, so I didn't make any money. He got paid for, 22 weeks in the theater at $700 a day. I didn't make that much money. So that's another world. It's a great business here. So you look at all these companies back here, most of them are privately owned. Philips owns Varilite and Strand and Color Kinetics, and that is a major world conglomerate. But go to Lysine, go to City Theatrical, go to ETC, go to Apollo, go to Roscoe. These are privately owned companies. When you have a question about a light, a thing, or something, you can call the owner of the company, and he wants to talk to you. Yeah, sure, he wants to talk to me, but he wants to talk to you, too, because he doesn't know what product came out. Scott said they came out with an incandescent wall clock, and they put a KB after it, which I'm very happy with. But I've been saying to Rick, why are we still using a Leco on a stick for an incandescent follow spot? Why doesn't somebody come up with a bright incandescent follow spot? Well, he's finally done it. I remember years ago with Fred Foster, him asking me about lighting consoles, and he created the Obsession because I was wanting something better. I don't get credit for these things. I don't get money for them. I don't get anything. I call them up. Gary Fales, I'm always talking to about, at City Theatrical, about things we need. I actually, in the hallway just before I came on, told him something I need. He thought it was a cool idea. He's going to draw it up. It's a laser sight to put on a gel frame to focus a light during the day with a laser in it. Anyway, laser pointer. But you may see it in the catalog, you may not, but he's going to try and figure it out for me. So anyway, the manufacturers, most of them studied lighting. They wanted to be lighting designers, or they wanted to be in the business, and they've done that. Their sales reps, very much the same thing. So I think what I'm saying, there's a huge world out there. There's the designer world, which I know. There are guys back here who are passionate, just as passionate about the business as I am, because passion is the most important thing. So I hope you have a good time today. You're going to hear a lot. Some of it's going to come and go. Some of it's going to fascinate you. But look at stuff. Play with stuff. Well, if you're lighting a show someplace and you don't know what to do, put the color in. If the color looks bad or the show looks bad, change the color. A sheet of color is cheap. It's $10, $8, whatever a sheet of color is. what's it cost? Hey, I put green in that light. You know what? Green doesn't work. As opposed to saying, I put green in it. Nobody's going to tell me to take the green out. Look at the show. Say the green didn't work. You go take it out. I have done that many times in my career. On one particular Broadway show, I regelled the whole show at the fifth preview because it looked so awful. And I said, wait a minute, what did I screw up here? And I honestly said to myself, I sat in the seat and I looked at the show and I said, I picked all the wrong color. And I went backstage and changed all, told them what I wanted. We had a work call the next day, this is on Broadway, and regelled the entire show. And we continued previewing that night without me ever looking at any of the cues. I thought it was going to be interesting, but wasn't radical. The pink was, the magenta was a lighter pink. It was a dark pink. The amber was still in the amber range. Everything was still in the same range. And the first cue came up and it looked great. It was a little out of whack. But the director was up hugging me in the back. Oh my God, the lighting's beautiful. It's beautiful. I don't know if it was beautiful, but I had screwed up on color. I knew I had screwed up on color. I changed the color. I make mistakes all the time, but I still love what I do. Thanks so very much. I'll be around if you want to talk to me.
What a great keynote. It's always inspirational to listen to Mr. Billington talk. Another super huge thank you to Mr. Scott Parker and Sonny Sonnenfeld for allowing me to record the keynote speech from Stage Seminars Super Saturday. Now, be sure to check out parts 2 and 3 coming up here on the iSquint podcast. Part 2 will feature an interview with none other than Mr. Sonny Sonnenfeld. Thanks everybody for joining me here on the iSquint podcast.